from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Summers were traditionally quiet on the news front, but of course that was before the internet provided an endless cycle of content. From the bishop's meeting in Baltimore, to the Supreme Court decisions of the past week, to beautiful displays of Catholic culture in the Corpus Christi processions, the Register's summer schedule is packed. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register correspondent Loretta Brown about covering her recent reporting from the Register's national desk in Washington, D.C. The Supreme Court decisions and communion to Catholic politicians have been her recent story agendas. And then we're joined by the Register's digital media guru, Alisa Murphy, who unpacks our summer story lineup, including summer indulgences. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the Register. Hey, Matthew.
Hello. Good to be with you.
And, of course, you're there in studio with Loretta Brown, who's in D.C. at our national desk. Hi, Loretta.
Hi. Good to be here.
Well, you two get the joy of being in the same room with each other, and I'm in hot Louisiana. Of course, we both live in swampy areas.
We do. And then and D.C. is a swamp in all kinds of ways.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking anyway. So, Loretta, you've been with the Register now just for, 6 months on staff, or maybe not even. So how has it been, and what's been, the most joyful and challenging things that you've covered?
Yeah, well, I've been on staff for a little over 3 months, and it's been quite the learning experience, and it's been very beautiful and enlightening, and I think I'm very pleased to be able to just have this opportunity to cover news from a Catholic perspective. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I've been referencing canon law more than I realized I would be, but it's been very edifying. I think what I've been enjoying most is seeing all this information on sides of issues that Catholics debate and talk about, where I sort of, back when I wasn't, you know, covering news from the more Catholic perspective, I would think, oh, well, this is pretty simple. This is pretty straightforward. And when I'm actually digging into this, I realize, actually, there's kind of a lot on both sides. There's a lot of things to consider that I wasn't even aware of. So I would very much describe it as a learning experience, but in a very good way. I think it's nice to be able to be informed about what goes into these topics of discussion and debate. And it's also been nice to have Mass here in the D.C. office. I really enjoy
that. That's right. I think Mass.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, over the lunch hour. So you said something that I want to draw out a little bit more. It's very interesting. I mean, you worked for townhall.com, and that and that has a political bent to it, you know. But now you're covering the same topics. I mean, religious liberty, what's going on at the Supreme Court, what's happening in Washington, D.C., maybe immigration, maybe about the candidates for the upcoming presidential race. So it's the same topics. How is it that it's so different? What is it that's making this coverage more rich for you?
Well, I think certainly I do cover some of the same topics, and I think that the perspective of I've spoken to faith experts on some of these issues now, which wasn't something I did as much in the past, and that part of it is interesting to hear. Different church teaching in relation to these issues, some of which I knew, some of which is like presented in a new way, or it's a new thing to me, and that's been interesting. I think also from the perspective of covering the 2020 candidates and all of that madness coming up here, I think it's been interesting to look at the candidates that call themselves Catholic and their records and where their Catholic faith really applies to their politics. And that whole intersection has been fascinating to me. The justifications they give, you know, like finding out that Biden used to quote Thomas Aquinas, just things I didn't even realize that they had thought about and talked about and, you know, agree or disagree. But it's been very interesting to see how their faith plays into how they discuss these things.
And as a reporter, then, looking at these individual candidates and sort of digging into their backgrounds, is this starting to give you a perspective that you know you're going to need as we move into the 2020 campaign?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I've been... It's funny, I do pay close attention to a lot of their statements, particularly on the religious freedom and abortion issues that I cover, primarily, and it's... I think it's really important, and I do think it's been great that I've noticed more so in the media people covering their statements on these issues and these issues coming up more and more. I think it might indicate that the public wants to hear about about this, which is I think a good thing, is moving a debate along on it and on these issues that like definitely matter to people of faith.
Of course, abortion has been, in the forefront. It's amazing how much that has already taken the lead in cultural issues for the upcoming election.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Is it really these past couple months? I've been so happy that I've been at the Register for this, to be able to see it from the perspective I am, but also that it is so prominent. And it started out early on this year. I think that it has been in the headlines, the abortion issue, but it's just been gaining steam. I remember thinking back when the late-term abortion debate came up with, the governor of Virginia's comments, the New York bill, that, oh, well, unfortunately, I think this conversation might fizzle out, but it keeps coming up, which is terrific. I think it's something that should be looked at and should be talked about, and I've been thrilled to see the 2020 candidates being pressed on, like, where would you set a limit on abortion, and have that important conversation.
And the economic aspects, too, of their individual platforms. We are seeing for the first time a number of candidates really espousing what is essentially socialist policies. And from a Catholic standpoint, that raises a lot of very interesting questions, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I have to admit, on the economic issues on that side of things, I haven't been covering that as much.
Right.
But it's definitely, I've been following some of those conversations, certainly, because I think it's been interesting to see the push out of the mainstream. And I know it's kind of partly because of the crowded field of Democrats and a lot of different issues and certain freshman congresspeople who have been having a habit of raising these more arguably socialist policies. But that has raised, I think, a lot of interesting questions.
And you've also just covered the bishops' meeting in Baltimore, which was itself unusual because usually their June meetings are much more quiet, and they're not even in Baltimore. They're in other places. This one, though, was fraught with a lot of drama going in, but it seemed pretty straightforward in its execution.
Yeah, and that was definitely a fascinating experience for me to go and for the first time cover in person that assembly, and it's... I definitely could feel, it was just very palpable, how much people wanted action on the abuse and credibility crisis in the church. It was the topic reporters kept bringing up and coming back to, and the bishops in the meeting kept saying, it was very clearly just... they were united in knowing they needed to take steps on this, but there was
and when we're talking about steps, we're talking about holding themselves accountable within the sex abuse crisis, especially after last November when they were not permitted to vote on measures to hold themselves accountable.
Exactly. Yeah. And so and they did pass some measures that a lot of them seemed confident in, and regarding implementing the Pope's motu proprio on the issue, his guidance, his kind of global guidance that addresses a series of things regarding accountability, reporting measures, all sorts of things that are, small steps, and recognizes certain relationships to, like, vulnerable adults that started that category. So it's clear that this kind of abuse can happen, and with not just minors but also this category of vulnerable adults, including seminarians, and So, yeah, I think they implemented the modo proprio, or, you know, they took the first steps in doing that, and they established a third-party reporting system, and there was a lot of talk about committing themselves voluntarily to lay participation in this process. And that was definitely the critical issue that I noticed, is that the National Review Board and the National Advisory Council, which they work with the USCCB, they very much wanted lay participation in the accountability process. And kind of a little roadblock there was the motu proprio establishing, kind of in the tradition of the more hierarchical structure of the church, the metropolitan model, with the metropolitan bishop handling that process, or the suffragan bishop, if the metropolitan was the person accused of something, had a conflict of interest. But even just reporting on this, following up on the meeting and seeing the reaction to it, I think there's still this concern of bishops policing bishops, and, you know, how serious are they about this lay accountability thing?
Right.
And so I think it's something we'll have to see. That was
right.
Something
not
that
everybody you talked to was completely happy with the outcomes of the meetings. I was recently reading your story and editing it. You spoke to Dr. Janet Smith at Detroit Seminary, Sacred Heart Seminary in Detroit, and she, all along throughout all of the scandal, has been expressing her concerns that lay people aren't involved and the bishops are still policing themselves, and really that was still a major outcome of this last assembly. I think she also expressed some hope that they were addressing it, but she's still pressing for the same changes. So it's certainly there's more more work that needs to be done. What were some of the other proposals of what more needs to be done from the people you talked to, not the bishops, but the people you talked to after the meeting?
Well, so I, as you mentioned, I spoke to some people who very much were and had a mixed reaction, you know, on what had been passed and what steps needed to be taken. So I talked to Father John Lavers, who had himself conducted an investigation to a seminary in 2012, where he'd uncovered some conduct that was very much, there were a lot of different issues, sexual harassment issues, homosexual actions, breaking of vows, all that sort of thing. And so he has consistently pushed for an outside, like almost an inspector general system, mm-hmm. Where the bishops establish this and say, okay, like this is here, but the bishops then do not have control over it. It is just an outside agent that can monitor the way abuse claims are handled. And he also very much emphasized that the very first step that needs to be taken is, particularly in the case of a minor, but also with these situations with vulnerable adults where there's any question, is to call 911, to call civil authorities. And it is something that was mentioned in the motu proprio, right. Reporting, I don't remember the exact line, but it was, reporting to the proper local authorities. And it is something that I believe it was either the Central Norms or the Dallas Charter, or both, did also, have the bishops commit themselves to that. But he's saying this is something that can't be emphasized enough, because he's seen situations where seminarians are still being advised, no, go to the bishop first, in a right. sort of a criminal issue like this. And I think it's very frustrating for the laity to watch these things play out, where, someone's not reporting properly, just, bare minimum to the civil authorities.
Right.
So, I will say, yeah, the motu proprio and what was discussed at the General Assembly are the canonical steps.
Father Lavers, part of what he's saying is a lot more education needs to happen on for the laity or for those who are vulnerable on what should exactly happen should a case of abuse arise. So, yes, absolutely, that education is necessary. We're already out of time. There's so much that we could talk about from this national desk, and we'll have you on again soon to get to more of what you've been covering. But I invite our listeners to go to ncregister.com to look at our follow-up coverage from the U.S. Bishops' meeting. Not only was a follow-up story done on these efforts to address the latest scandals of sexual abuse. But also, Loretta did a story about communion for Catholic politicians and what the bishops are saying about that subject line. So it's a very important story, and it's going to get more important as the presidential campaign begins to heat up even more. So Loretta, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
When we come back, Matthew and I discuss fun summer news with Elisa Murphy, the Register's Digital Assets Managing Editor. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Matthew Bunsen.
The National Catholic Register is that rarest of institutions in Catholic media, striving always to be faithful, orthodox, timely, and dedicated to journalistic excellence. Catholics know they can always depend on the Register for the news they need to know from an authentically Catholic perspective.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DiMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. We also have Elisa Murphy, the Register's digital media guru, is what I like to call her. She's our managing editor of the digital world. Elisa, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you so much for having me. It's so great to be here. Happy summer to you all.
Exactly, the summer heat, but also summer fun. And we've had some fun at the Register, even amidst the important news that we are following. And one of the greatest things about the beginning of summer, I think, are these wonderful feast days, these solemnities. And, you know, I was married on the Solemnity of the Most Holy Trinity that passed a few weeks ago. It was a wonderful opportunity for me because I went to another wedding on that feast day, which just reminded me of my own. But we had Corpus Christi last Sunday, and we have the Sacred Heart of Jesus this week as well. So the Corpus Christi celebration, I'm in Louisiana now. I'm in Mandeville, Louisiana, and I went to a church in Covington, Louisiana called St. Peter's. And I had forgotten that they do a wonderful procession. Many years ago, I covered it for a television show I used to do for the Archdiocese of New Orleans. I covered this with video. And I forgot about it, and I went to Mass there, and I was able to participate with my kids in this beautiful Corpus Christi celebration at St. Peter's in Covington. But I know that our readers and our listeners have also joined us in sharing their plans or their experiences of Corpus Christi last Sunday. What are the offerings that we have on the Register right now?
You know, Jeanette, what's amazing about a digital platform like ncregister.com is our conversation is a two-way street, and we love to hear from our readers about what they're doing, how they're participating, especially in these wonderful feasts and solemnities that we do have within our church internationally. So we've heard from so many people. Ryan Beck, writing in from Alta Loma, California, sent some beautiful images, children and families all marching along at St. Peter and St. Paul Parish there in Alta Loma. We also heard from readers in Bayonne, New Jersey, who marched from Mount Carmel to St. Mary's by the Sea. Also, Sister Tonya Barcelino sent in some beautiful photos of their procession. And we also have one from Colorado, Chandra Enrich, writing in from Holy Name Parish. Just some beautiful photos of these in really long processions.
And Elisa, you say
it lasted 2 hours long.
Oh, wow. And you're saying, you know, they've written in. So how did they do so? I mean, through Facebook and through, you know, I've seen that there are 51, 52 photos that we've selected from among what our listeners and readers have sent to us. How were they sending it? And tell us how this happened.
Sure. So we actually did ask readers to send in photos. We used all of our social media facets to do that, Facebook, Twitter, as well as Our blog guru, Kevin Knight, Sir Kevin Knight, always on task there, wrote a wonderful blog, and we were sharing that over the weekend. And that really engaged all of our readers. We even had some coming in from the UK, a woman, Beatrice, sending in photos from London. So it's a really wonderful display and spread of how diverse our readership is and how colorful the Catholic Church
is.
Absolutely.
I'm ashamed I didn't take a picture when I was at the procession last week. But it's awesome. I mean, this was something we talked about doing. I'm so glad we pulled it off, and I hope we're able to do it more often because, I mean, amidst the craziness of our culture, you know, we are bombarded with images. We're bombarded with images that really assault the faith and assault humanity in many respects. And so I love it when we have the opportunity to put forward images of our Catholic culture that edify, that build up. And of course, there's nothing more important than Corpus Christi. There's just nothing. Our priest at the parish we went to at St. Peter's, he said, there were never more important words spoken than "this is my body, this is my blood." And so for us to be able to highlight the most important words spoken and the most important person in Christ and in the Feast of Corpus Christi is hugely important to me. So thanks for being a part of recognizing that and sharing that conversation with our listeners and readers.
So, no, it's a real pleasure because when you consider, you know, I myself am a convert, and one of the things that really struck me about the Catholic Church is the Catholic imagination, if you will, is how we, you know, we believe that these are real, true things, and there's beauty in that, in the sacrament, and it's amazing to see families coming together and children understanding that at such a young age. It really is something that you honestly normally don't see in papers, but that's why you can always turn to the National Catholic Register. And of course, we're always online, ncregister.com.
Yeah, Elisa, there's something that is so traditional about summers that families are able to share that time together. The kids are out of school. The parents look forward to the vacation. But we're changing today in culture where schools often go 12 months out of the year, and that together time is so limited. So I appreciate the fact that you're trying to document for parents the things that they can do with their kids.
Yes, and you know, there are so many things. Our blogger extraordinaire, Patty Armstrong, has a beautiful piece coming out very soon on all of the wonderful summer camps that kids can take part in. Many of them are family-oriented, so you can bring your entire family for week-long trips. And of course, we'll be bothering everyone for their photos of that as well as the summer goes along here. But also, right now, if you visit our website, you can hear about some wonderful books that are great to have this summer. Katie Warner, one of our bloggers, has a wonderful piece up about summer reading. And she actually interviews Sam Guzman of The Catholic Gentleman. Many people know of him and follow his website. He recommends Cardinal Seurat's beautiful book, The Power of Silence. And that really speaks to what you were saying, Jeanette, about the noise and the chaos of what we kind of are immersed in this digital world, and how to find some interior silence and to find those quiet moments so we can turn to God and look for that kind of direction.
Absolutely.
And also there's a beautiful kids book he recommends as well, the Prince Martin epic series. It's not Le Petit Prince, it's a new boy prince who learns the true meaning of courage and sacrifice and some beautiful illustrations. So just wonderful things to pick up in these summer months.
You know, you mentioned Patty Armstrong, one of the pieces she worked on for the summer, and I've just been editing it in our July 7th print edition, is called Faith on the Road. And this is about vacation opportunities to visit churches. So, you know, when you're out on vacation, and you usually, you know, look up a church and you go to the nearest one or whatever. But what she's suggesting is you may be in a place where there's a rather special church, a church that has a shrine or a relic or some historical value. And so she's suggesting, you know, when you're on your vacation, that you take this opportunity to go to one of these historic places. It's really an interesting story. And she's got some pictures of her of some of her own travels in it. And you can see a picture of Patty in one of these churches. And so that's a very fun story that's coming up. And Roxanne King, in the same issue, this is the July 7th edition of the Register, the print edition, has a story on summer adventures and, like you said, the kind of camps that you can go to. Of course, sometimes we stay indoors during the summer because it's too hot, especially here in Louisiana. and so we may go to movies. And I think we did have a summer movie show a few weeks ago with Stephen Gray Donis, but he's got more summer movies to recommend. What are some of those?
Well, one that is still hitting the box offices by storm. I'm sure many of our readers might be taking their children to see that this weekend, actually, is the new installment of Toy Story 4, the new Pixar animated flick. And I think it very much is a special addition we have here at the Register to have Deacon Stephen Gray Donis on our team, because I think he's the only person that would review this movie and break it down into philosophical and existential mysteries. I don't think you get that anywhere else. But what's fascinating about it is he really does kind of talk about the roots of the story. And what a toy means to a child, and it's a very beautiful piece. I mean, this is no spoiler alert, so if you haven't seen it, don't worry. But he really talks about the relationship between children and toys, and the fundamental lesson that all children do learn in cradling a doll, picking up a plushy fluffy as you're going to bed, taking care of it. You know, it's really a way children learn to love.
So I look forward to that
piece. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
I have been in the midst of a move, and I can tell you, my husband and I need a children's film. So I think maybe we'll do date night and go see Toy Story.
And not only promise everything during the summer, it's not a Marvel film.
Yes, exactly. It's not a Marvel film, which my husband would enjoy, but I wouldn't. So, but Elisa, thanks for offering, you know, this this blend of what the summer has for our listeners at the Register. And it's really, again, thank you for helping us to focus on these cultural aspects as well. We didn't really talk much about Joe Pronishan's piece on summer indulgences. He does this almost every summer, and it's one of our top trending pieces. So I really encourage our listeners to go to ncregister.com. And if it's not still on our trending list, then just search in the search bar summer indulgences, and you'll find this piece by Joseph Pronishan. And this is just an opportunity for us to draw closer to our Lord at a shrine or in some other way through this summer indulgence and have this experience of reconciliation and unity with our Lord Jesus Christ. So, Elisa, thanks a bunch again for what you do for us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. It was a pleasure.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.